The Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab number 58 for June 20th, 2006. Greetings, folks. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab. I'm Dave Hamilton. I'm here with John Braun, as always. Hi, John.
Hi, Dave. You know, it's a bit crowded in here, though.
It is. If you can hear that extra little air conditioner noise, we've got a special guest with us, as promised. Bob Levitis is here. Hi, Bob.
Yo. Yo, dudes.
How are you, man?
God, it sounds like you're right here in my office with me.
Doesn't it, though? That's the way it should be.
Technology is great.
You know, I want to take a minute and talk about the technology, because we use, as most of you know, we use Skype to do this show, and John and I do that every week. We've obviously just had Bob join the Skype chat here, and it just works. You know, I use iChat video a lot. Man, that thing is a pain to deal with the firewalls and all that stuff, but Skype, it just works. Why can't Apple get that right? Yeah, they do a lot well. iChat.
Wow, that was a rant.
Well, you know.
Yeah,
you go.
I mean, I got to say, this is my first three-way with Skype, and it was painless.
Wow.
I do three-way, four-way, five-way.
Hey, man.
Have you really? No, seriously.
You've lived the life, yeah. Though.
No, Mac, the most. You've done five people with Skype, Bob? Oh, yeah.
We have. Listen to the Mac Notables podcast. Sometimes there's, I think, six or seven of us.
Yeah.
Usually just two or three, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does get crowded in there, in that little room.
You've lived quite a bit. I mean, you were a roadie for the Jackson 5, for crying out loud, Bob. So.
Ooh. Yes, I was, Dave.
And I imagine that's about all of our respective pasts that we care to share.
Wait. If you're going to do that, I was also a roadie for Sean Cassidy.
That's right. Yeah.
And if you want to know more, we're now working on Bob's Secrets, Volume 1.
My book, Groupie at Heart.
So, Bob has long been, of course, a Mac guru, of course, called Dr. Macintosh for years and years. And, frankly, is someone that I've gone to in the past for advice related to how best to back up my Mac. And we at TMO actually work together with Bob on this backup special, how to back up your Mac. It's a PDF, and it's also available online. And so we figured we'd use that as a good excuse to have Bob on, and we'll talk about nothing but backups. So I have no idea how long this show's going to go. It may be short, it may be long. It doesn't really matter. It depends on how tired we all get. And we'll apologize for Bob's air conditioner, but only once, and we'll leave it at that. So, that's that. So,
backup.
There you go. So, Bob, I'll start with some general questions here about backing up, and then we've actually got some listeners who have written in questions and sent in questions about backing up, and we'll sort of try to weave all that together into something that's less incoherent than most of the shows we do. What are the most, to you, what are the most common misconceptions about backing up? What do folks usually get wrong, and what do folks miss in your experience and travels throughout the Mac land here?
Well, I think they fall into two categories. The first is people underestimate how painful it's going to be to lose all their photos or all their songs. Or all their Word files or Excel files, whatever it is that's important to them. They only think about it when it's too late. And then the second is, it's really not that hard if you automate it so you don't have to think about it. If you use a program like Retrospect, where you can automate the whole process, it'll wake your Mac up in the middle of the night, do the whole backup, and leave you a little note that says, I did the backup you asked for.
Yep.
Now, I noticed that one of the things you had on the list was Retrospect's crappy interface. And I agree. Retrospect is not easy to learn, but once you figure it out, nothing else works like that. I mean, it's just, for me, I don't think about it. I don't worry that it didn't do it right, or it didn't do it last night and it should have.
Yep.
Once you get it going, it goes. It just goes. Plus, as a consultant, I have clients that, you know, pay me to come over and help them set up retrospects.
Sure. There you go. So you like the crummy interface. Yeah.
No, I don't really. I wish they'd fix it, but, you know, it's not the worst thing in the world. It's a little obscure.
What I've always said to clients is that retrospect is 100% backwards of everything else you've ever seen. And once you accept that, then it's not so bad, but there is a learning curve to it. I mean, reading through the PDF, you actually spend a lot of time walking people through how to set up retrospect. And
why? Because they need that. It's important.
Yeah, they need it. That's right. Yeah, they shouldn't need
it. There's a whole chapter that's like the walkthrough of retrospect. Mm-hmm. Hey, by the way, mm-hmm. I have an exclusive offer for our listeners. I forgot all about this. Dude. I meant to send you an email. Check this out. For our listeners and also for our readers.
Okay.
But on the first page of chapter one, there's the obligatory Drive Savers plug where I basically say, if you don't back up, you're going to end up contributing to Scott Giordano's Ferrari fund. Scott is the CEO of Drive Savers, which is the kind of quintessential drive recovery company. Really nice guy.
Yep.
Nice Ferrari. Anyway, he called me today and he said two things. One is, they don't charge you thousands of dollars if they're unsuccessful. They only charge you a couple hundred. And here's the offer for our listeners.
Okay.
If you mention my name,
yeah.
If you call them up and you've got a crash drive and you say, Bob, Dr. Mac Levita sent me, they will waive the $200 fee for looking at your computer, so you'll have no risk. You can send it to them. You'll only have to pay for recovery if they think they can get your files back.
Wow.
Dude, isn't that something?
That's sweet, man.
So Scott's a good guy. If
you're totally going to ignore everything else that we're going to talk about in this podcast and everything that Bob's written both on the web and the PDF that you can buy for $3.99 from MacObserver.com, that's the thing that's going to save your tuchus there. Speaking of data recovery, actually, John, you had a question for Bob.
I asked that?
Yeah.
No, I do. No, actually, I was going to bring up one thing, is that I do like the Drive Savers guys, because a lot of times at the shows, they will show some horribly mangled hard drive that they were able to save, and it's always fun to see what they can recover.
It's actually good to point out that though they do not guarantee success, they can pull data off of just about anything.
They had some of the stuff they showed, for example, one of the drives they recovered was at the bottom of the Amazon for 5 days.
Fell
out of a boat. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
It was filled with water. They dried it out in their clean room, and they managed to recover all the data. Another one had the lost episode of The Simpsons on it. It was like the only digital copy of an episode of The Simpsons.
That's crazy, man. Cool.
And they had another one was burnt up in a fire, and they got the data off. So if you just screw up and forget to back up, they probably could get your data back.
Yeah. Yeah, but don't screw up.
No, because it'll cost you more than a backup system.
Yeah, before
it cost you a lot more than you're going to spend on hard disks and retrospects.
That's true. So before you call Drive Savers, though, there's a couple things that John wanted to ask about.
Yes. So you may be in a situation where maybe your drive is starting to fail, and I wanted to get your spin, Bob, on some of the recovery utilities. Now, of course, there's what Apple gives you, the drive utility, but there's also stuff like ProSoft has a couple of things that I've some friends have had success with, either Drive Genius or Data Rescue or the other utilities. And I just wonder your thoughts on, or the ones that you've had particular good luck with.
I'll say this. Over the years, I've had good luck with all of them at times. Mm-hmm. The ones that I think have been most consistently helpful, if your drive is crapping out and you suspect it's a directory issue, in other words, you're starting to see files and folders disappearing from where they were, and stuff that you saved, is you're getting error messages. And if you don't think that it's a mechanical failure, I really think Disk Warrior is the most likely to repair the damage and let you go on with your life.
Preach on, brother.
And that, that's the first thing I'll whip out for me or my clients if they're having hard disk trouble. The second thing, though, is Data Rescue. And Data Rescue is a great deal. You can download the software and use it and look to see if it can find files before you pay. So yeah. you download the demo, and basically you don't pay if it can't recover your files. Can't get a much better deal than that. So I think the ProSoft stuff's great. I'm not sure about Drive Genius yet. It's kind of new. And you know, there's been times when Micromat's deal...
And the ADD takes over.
Gosh, I'm blanking, and you know, I talked to them
Tech
like
Tool
yesterday.
Tech Tool Pro, you mean?
Tech Tool Pro, that would be it. Yeah. There have been times when that has done stuff that nothing else could do.
Yeah.
So, you know, I keep, if I were a working consultant and I had to buy this stuff, I would buy a copy of each.
Yeah.
Because you never know. Sometimes one will work when the other doesn't. If I was going to say what order I'd buy them in, I'd buy Disk Warrior first, Tech Tool Pro second, yeah, and Data Rescue only when I needed it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I tend to use all three. Actually, the third being Drive Genius, but in that order, I use. Of course, there goes the ADD.
Disk Warrior.
Thank you,
ADD
Disk
boy.
Warrior. Thank you. So Disk Warrior, and then Tech Tool Pro, and then Drive Genius. And a lot of times, it was just like the old days when Norton Utilities was actually worth a darn. That you know, you sometimes had to use
what
Norton Utilities,
to them?
And then something else, and then Norton, and then so, and you know, you kind of had to go back and forth. And don't forget about, you know, the Command S going into single user mode there and running FSCK. As we've found, that is different than running disk utility.
Disk utility, even
from a different drive. Even if you boot from your CD or your DVD, running FSCK from the command line is different than running disk utility.
And that's the first thing I'll try,
yeah,
because it really costs you nothing. It's very quick, mm-hmm, compared to booting from a CD,
yeah,
or running Disk Warrior. I had a drive not too long ago that Disk Warrior took 5 hours.
Oh,
it
yeah,
fixed it,
oh,
but
yeah,
it chugged away for 5 hours, and I was pretty sure it was hosed.
Yeah,
but,
right,
you know, got to the end and went, hey, guess what? It worked.
Now, I thought I mentioned, I'm just looking at it, I was doing some surfing here, Tech Tool Protege. Do you guys remember this?
Oh, yeah.
Mine is on it. That's why I talked to them. It's on its way. They're sending me one this week, finally.
So I remember seeing it at the show, but yeah, so it's a FireWire, or is it a USB bootable? It looks FireWire bootable.
It's FireWire, yeah.
Dongle. So even if all your drives on your computer are totally hosed, this thing can boot and try.
Yeah, yeah. That was pretty neat.
I remember seeing that.
All right, so Bob, I've got a question for you that I didn't prep you with. You've always loved doing that. As long as I've known you, you've always preached about the virtues and value in backing up. Is this something that you knew and innately and did for yourself without prompting, or did you lose data or get really close to losing data before you were a member of the Enlightened Club, as it were?
You know, I don't remember, but it's been 20 years,
yeah,
and
yeah.
As far back as I can remember, I've been obsessive about backing up, mm-hmm, data, because I have this threshold. I'm not willing to lose more than 2 to 4 hours worth of my work. If it's more than 2 to 4 hours, it upsets me greatly. It's like, you know, if I lost everything I wrote yesterday, that would really piss me off.
Yeah.
So as far back as I can remember, I've automated the backup process so that the important stuff is backed up every 2 to 4 or 6 hours, or you know, at least once a day.
All right, so that actually leads into another question. Tell us what, and I know you're not the average user, and most folks out there probably don't need to follow the regimen that you do, being an author and someone who's constantly generating content and text for a living. But what is your backup regimen?
And video and audio.
Yeah, there you
know,
go. Yeah, that's right.
All right, so my backup regimen today, I have 4 external FireWire drives, and Retrospect backs up to them in a round-robin fashion. It'll, yep, back up to one day, and then 12 hours later, a second one, and then 12 hours later, the third one, 12 hours later, the fourth one. Then there's certain things that are backed up more frequently and backed up to a different location. So, for example, I use Backjack.
Okay.
And I use Backjack... excuse me, Backjack only to back up my current work folder. So stuff that I'm working on today gets backed up to Backjack twice a day or 4 times a day. But that's it, you know, because it's really slow. But it's perfect for that. And plus, that's the stuff I might want on the road. If I go out of town, I usually back up whatever I might need a couple days before to backjack. That way, no matter where I am, if I have a decent internet connection, I can get a copy of it. Yep. And then the other thing I do is I usually, out of the four hard drives, usually one of them is in my safe deposit box. Right now, I've got all four here. I need to take one out of rotation and put it away.
Got it.
But it's important to have one that's not on site in case of an act of God or, flood, fire.
Theft even, right?
I mean, theft. Oh, even more likely than fire or act of God, I think.
Yeah. That's one of my
especially if the hard disk is sitting next to your Mac. It's like, you know, they're going to take both.
Yeah. Sure. What were you saying, John?
No, that was one of my favorites is you have a great backup plan, but you keep everything in the same place. So.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
So all your backups perish along with you.
You mentioned Backjack. Is that, and I'm sure you have a .Mac membership, so I'm sure you have the option of using either Backjack or .Mac for your online backups. Why choose Backjack over .Mac? No good reason, huh?
No. I like the Backjack. I feel more comfortable that the Backjack software is doing what I want it to do. And also, it's less expensive for more than 1 gigabyte.
Got it. And how do you feel
it's like for 5 or 10 gigabytes, their deal is pretty good, and Apple's is pretty high.
Yeah. How do you feel about security of having a Backjack store your data in Canada or Apple store your data who knows where?
Well, I don't have anything that's sensitive, so I don't really care that much. No, I'm serious. I know I have clients that would care. They would encrypt their stuff before they'd send it.
Right.
You know, they'd put it in archives and encrypt it or something because they're that paranoid. But, you know, if somebody wants my Houston Chronicle column from last month,
it's just
welcome to it, you know.
Knock yourself out.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, but that's a good point. I mean, there is, I'll have to look at it. I haven't looked for a while, but like PGP or I think Stuffit has, password compressor encrypt mode, which uses pretty good encryption. But that's something to think about. Especially, I always get nervous, public servers like .Mac, I mean, who else can get at it? So.
Well, the thing is, the stuff that's sensitive is password protected. So, like, you can't open my Quicken file without my... Mm-hmm. 46 character password.
Wow.
And good luck, you know. If you can guess that, you deserve it.
Okay. So Bob, I was wondering, talking about all the different options. I mean, we've been through, from the floppy, which I'm sure for the, the early pioneers of backup, that was very painful. And getting up to like
400 and 800K.
Oh, those are big.
Not
that's
megabyte,
three. That's
baby.
300. That's 3.5-inch floppies, man.
5 1/4.
Oh, you guys are really old.
Yeah, we're Apple.
Well, we were young geeks.
We're Apple.
Yeah, 140K was the first floppy, right?
Yeah,
Dave?
Man. Yeah.
140K.
Well, 160 wasn't it? 160, and then 320 if you did double sided.
35 or 40 track, whatever. But anyway, so now you're up to newer devices. But the one thing I noticed, Bob, reading over your article. Was there are different options that you mentioned, and I just wonder if you could give people a feel for the different speeds. Like, for example, on the G4, I got bit with DVD RAM. I thought it would be really great, like a DVD, but it was
pig is slow. And so is DVD.
It was terrible.
So is DVD-R, super drive. Very, very slow. However, it's pretty good capacity, and the price is really low. So what's important to you? You know, I think the best backup media is hard disks. They're cheap now. They really are cheap now. And to get enough to do what you really need to do is a few $100. Tape will cost you more, and it won't last as long. And your backups will take 10 times longer, 5 times longer.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm with you on that. Hard drive to me is the preferred, and they seem to keep getting bigger and bigger so they can hold all your data. Because I lean
cheaper.
Towards doing full things like carbon copy cloner or something. So I just kill
you.
It in one shot a lot of times, and then I do it every now. But I've always been nervous, and I wonder this may be kind of impromptu, but I've always been nervous with some backup programs with like they do incremental backups and progressive and all this stuff where they try to detect what's changed and stuff. And I'm curious if you how you set up your backups, if you trust the program to get it right or what.
Here's what I do: one of those hard disks is a mirror image of my boot disk.
Okay.
And the reason for that is I can't be down for very long. If my hard disk blows up, I need to get back to work on my PowerBook or my iMac that my kids use, but something. I can't be out of business if my main Mac's hard disk craps out. Mm-hmm. So I clone my hard disk to an external drive. I use Retrospect's duplicate function because it's automated. It does it in the middle of the night. When I wake up in the morning, everything from yesterday is on one of those hard disks. I could take it to Kinko's if I had to,
now,
or to your house.
Will Retrospect's duplicate function create a bootable drive? Does it take care of the permissions and everything for you, Bob?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Okay,
and there's other stuff that'll do that. You know, sure. Carbon Copy Cloner will do it. Super Duper will do it for free. Or if you pay $20, it'll do that and a lot more. Really nice program. Really easy to understand. Great interface for that kind of thing. And Chronosync will do it. And I use Chronosync to keep folders synchronized between my PowerBook and my Mac. Because
really?
It's really a little more, well, it's a little more suitable for bi-directional, you know, where you're going both ways.
Yeah.
Retrospect's great for going one way and keeping one copy the same as the other. But, like, I'll go on the road and I'll come back and I'll clone from my PowerBook back to my main drive, my whole work folder.
Now, what do you do about, this kind of goes off the beaten path here, but that's okay. What do you do about your email when you travel?
Before I leave, I clone my home folder onto the PowerBook.
Okay.
So I have all my mail with me.
Right.
Then when I get home,
you
what I do is...
No,
I don't have to. I save a folder of... I have a folder when I'm on the road of stuff that goes back to the G5. And later when I get home, I just drag those mail messages over. So, you know, while I'm away, if I'm away for a week, maybe there's 20 things I need to save or 10.
Yep.
So rather than cloning the whole thing back and forth, usually I make a folder on the desktop.
Sure.
And that's stuff to go back.
Yeah.
And that way I don't have to clone back. But, you know, it depends how long I'm away and how much work I do and how many things I changed. And
sure. Sure.
But usually I just, you know, usually the easy way for me is to just set aside the mail I want to take back to my big machine and move that mail over.
That makes sense.
Yeah, without dealing with the... Because I have a lot of mail. I have like maybe 2 or 3 gigabytes in the folder.
That's kid stuff,
I don't
stuff,
need all
Bob.
Of that moving back and forth.
Kids.
Well,
stuff.
I cleaned it out not too long ago.
Why?
I figure those messages from 1984 aren't... I'm never going to need them. I've never needed them in 22 years, you know?
But you will tomorrow.
That's yeah, well, right. they're archived.
Ah,
they're on DVDs.
Smart man. I wonder how you guys feel. It's not quite backup, but iDisk, synchronizing an iDisk, or did we cover? We covered something similar to that. But it is
well,
nice,
the iDisk
but it's
isn't,
built in.
Yeah, the iDisk isn't big enough, though, for most of the things that you'd want to do.
Yeah.
You know, it's okay for, like, a project folder that doesn't have a lot of graphics or sound or video. But when you start getting into anything that's, you know, taking up disk space, you run out pretty quick on your iDisk.
Yeah, you do. You do.
That
and
said,
Apple's backup program, I know this kind of weaves in and out. Apple's backup program does a weird thing where it won't let you recycle the backup. You know, if you do a backup with Apple's backup 3.0 to your iDisk or to your .Mac account, it does, you know, the first one obviously is a full backup and then it's incrementals from then on, but you can never get it to reset to the full backup without manually doing so, and your iDisk will fill up and it sucks.
I know. I just had to do that. And in fact, after I did it, I stopped using Backup 3.
Yeah.
I figure I'm backing up enough other places, I don't need that extra fail-safe.
Right. It used to work great with Backup 2. Yeah.
Yeah, it's too bad because for a lot of people, that would be all they'd need.
That's
backup
right.
to iDisk.
Yeah.
It kills two birds with one stone.
Yeah.
It'll do incremental backup, so if you corrupt a file, you have the version from yesterday or the day before you can get at.
That's right.
And it's off-site, so...
Yep.
The problem is it's just 1 gigabyte, and that's not really enough for serious backup. You know, it's like a gigabyte.
Yeah.
Well, they'll sell you more.
I do, like, 50 gigabytes a day.
They'll sell you more.
Oh, yeah, but it's not cheap.
No, it's not.
How much is it? I haven't looked in a while.
All right,
maybe
I'll
look while you're doing that.
Okay, well, while you look, listen to Steve's comment here, or Steve's question about backup strategy. We may have gone through some of this, but I think there's probably some that's still relevant. So, Steve, take it away.
Hey, John and Dave.
And Bob.
Steve in Seattle again. Been meaning to call you guys about my backup dilemma. I typically back up my computer using Deja Vu to an external hard drive, same size as my main drive, but it doesn't include all of the movies and stuff I have on my second drive. Then also, having that hard drive here doesn't protect me in case the house burns down or gets broken into. I used to take in about once or so a year, make disk images of important folders on my computer and burn them onto a DVD, put them in my safe deposit box at the bank. That's kind of clunky because it takes a lot of time to pick and choose what I can fit on a DVD, and I'm hearing about DVDs flaking and all sorts of things. So, wondering if you can suggest an all-around backup strategy, particularly for those of us who have hundreds of gigs of data. Thanks in advance, and look forward to hearing from you.
Okay, that's a real easy one.
There you go.
For $3.99, we'll sell you a PDF that has everything you need to know to answer that question. I'm not kidding.
No, you're
right. That's exactly what the PDF is about.
Yeah,
that's right. How to back up large amounts of data and you know, be able to sleep at night.
And not drive yourself crazy doing it, yeah.
Exactly.
That's true, yeah.
I mean, I'm serious. It's more than we could do verbally here on the show. But if that's the question... The answer really is, and you don't have to pay for it. We put it up for free, too.
We did.
You can read it on the
that's
web.
That's right. That's right.
I think that's a cool deal, Dave.
Yep.
I'm glad that it worked out that way.
I am,
very
too.
Cool.
Yeah. No, I like having it on the web, and if people want to archive it, man, take the PDF. It's $4. How much is that? It's $4. It's less than a cup of coffee. For less than a cup of coffee, you can save your own life, right? We need the Paco Bell cannon and Sally Struthers here, but for
Where
less
do you buy
than
your
a price.
Coffee?
What's that?
Oh, never mind.
They got Starbucks here in New Hampshire, you know, John.
Okay, I was going to say.
Not in Durham, but...
Overpriced coffee.
Overpriced coffee, yeah, man.
Okay, but, so
you know, brings up, the question, you know, did bring up, for example, you know, it sounded like our caller. Were they a caller or a recorder? I don't know, but...
we'll call them a caller. You know, that's
like
fine.
Different types of data. So I think, you know, Bob touches on in his... document there about, you know, what do you really need to back up? Like, it sounds like this person was very concerned about more data and pictures and audio and stuff, not so much applications. So that's
well, and I talk about that because for some people, nothing but backing up 100% of their boot disk will do, and for other people, they probably only have to back up a couple of folders, you know, maybe their mail, their Quicken, their Word, you know, or Excel files, and that's it. So it just depends on how you use your computer and what, you know, what stuff would hurt to lose. By the way,
that's the big question right there. Yeah.
4 gigabytes of iDisk, $100 a year.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
So another $100 for 3 more gigabytes, which still isn't really enough.
Yeah. Yeah.
I guess you can buy more than one.
Yeah, but how fast is your upstream, right? I mean, that's the problem. The cable providers keep giving us more and more downstream speed, but upstream speed seems to be hard to come by. And really, that's the trick, right? You need a ton of upstream bandwidth in order to make this workable. You know, even if you're doing it at night, there's only so much that you can do at 512K up. Or even at, like John, right? John, you've got 2 megabits up. But, I mean, it's only going to give you so much. You're not going to back up your whole hard drive, so.
My broadband providers now, it was Southwestern Bell, now it's AT&T, and they just sent me an email that they've now got 3 flavors of DSL.
Okay.
You know, slow, medium, and fast.
Yeah, but what's fast? What's the high
I'm
speed?
I'm trying to find it. To find it.
Okay.
768, maybe?
I got a postcard.
I doubt it's 768. DSL has always in the U.S. anyway, been notably slower than cable on the upstream. And most cable providers are maxing out at 512. I've got 768. Like I said, John, I know you've got 2 megabits, but you're one of the chosen ones, John. So,
yeah, Optimum is, Cablevision is very good with their cable modem.
Yes.
Control.
All right.
Yes.
Their fastest upstream is 608.
Okay,
and that is $44.99, and then you get 3 to 6
down. Yeah, okay,
that's not bad. $44. I may actually switch to that.
All right, so we've got an email from Jeff here, and Jeff asks us, "Hey guys, I currently use Apple's backup to back up my photos and files to my .Mac space. However, the 1 gig allotment is not really enough anymore."
And I want, read our mind.
That's right. And I want to be able to back up to my FTP site that I already pay for. What's the easiest way to do this? Possibly a solution using Backup, Automator, and or Transmit to do it? Would that even work? Bob, do you have
that
any thoughts?
It would work, but it's not something I would personally try. You know, that's a lot. It's a lot of tweaking.
Well, Bob, so, does Retrospect? I thought Retrospect would let you do maybe.
Well, it will let you do remote network backups, but it's got to be on a local. No, it's got to be a local network. And the other thing is, if you could mount the disk as a volume,
that
you
would
could
be
use Retrospect.
Yeah.
But I don't think you can with just an FTP site. Now, one thing you could do probably would be to have your backup back up to a disk image file and then compress the disk image and send that to the FTP site.
Yeah.
That would probably be fairly easy to automate.
Huh. Yeah, that would work.
And I believe Transmit is scriptable, so you ought to be able to figure out a way to, you know, make this all.
Transmit actually rocks with Automator. I'm using it now for the. I've got an Automator script that when we're done with the podcast, I go ahead and drag the resulting AIFF file to this Automator action and or Automator workflow rather, and using Transmit and many other things, it converts it, names it, uploads it, ready to go. Transmit's very well scriptable, and it's even got, if you're willing to do it manually, Transmit's got this this thing that they call droplets.
I love that. I'm doing this video of GarageBand,
yeah,
and I made a droplet of the folder I have to put stuff in.
Right,
it's so idiot proof. It like takes 3 seconds.
Yep.
I drag the file onto the little icon and pretty soon it pops up and says I'm done.
Yeah. So if you're willing to do your backup semi-manually, all you'd have to do is take a folder and drag it to a Transmit droplet, and away it goes. That's all you need to do. You can save the password in there and everything, and you're good to go. So it's not 100% automated, and you could probably figure something out with a cron job that just did it, right? I mean, even if you were using LFTP, I mean, there's an LFTP binary available for OS X at the command line. You could do it that way too.
You might actually be able to do it with quickies if you can't do it with other scripting tools.
Yeah, good point.
Because quickies will work on almost anything. It'll let you, perform actions that wouldn't be possible other ways.
Yep. That's a good point.
So, it's a thought.
I got one for Bob.
Go ahead.
What are your thoughts on RAID, Bob? That's something that I think is now part of OS X.
If you have insect infestation, I think RAID is good. Oh, you're talking about a redundant array of independent disks.
Yeah, I guess when you set up your system, you could choose to format them in a certain way.
Oh, I guess it's inexpensive, right? It's not independent.
It's either inexpensive or independent. No,
either one.
Yeah, I don't think there's any. I don't think there's a consensus on it.
I'm sure you say
tomato, I say tomato.
I'm sure Wikipedia has the answer.
It is the source of all knowledge.
It probably says both.
What's your experience setting those up?
Bob? I'm sorry to interrupt, John. I'll say that again, but you're absolutely right. Wikipedia says both.
Because nobody's ever decided which it really is.
Go ahead, John.
I have a RAID on my desk. I use it for audio and video recording.
Okay.
It's basically used for that only. It's 500 gig RAID. It's got two 500s in it.
So it's mirrored?
And it's FireWire. Yeah, and it's FireWire 800.
Oh, okay.
So it's by far my fastest drive, and it's given me no trouble whatsoever since the day I set it up.
That's good.
It's just a drive. I mean, it's a really fast, big, a really big, fast drive. But as far as my Mac is concerned, it's just a drive.
Of course, the issue. Now you said it's two 500, so it's mirrored. Is that right?
Right.
Oh, okay. So if one dies, you're still totally covered. That's really, if you want a backup that is 100% bulletproof. Well, maybe not 100%. Thank you.
Yeah.
And that is the second thing that goes on there is one of my complete backups of the hard disk goes on to the RAID disk. So it's actually being backed up twice.
Right.
Yep.
Yeah.
I could make it a little faster by striping.
Yeah, but then if one of the drives dies, man.
All the data's gone, I know.
Yeah.
That's why I've got it mirrored.
Yep. Yep. Are we done here?
I don't know.
Like we've kind of hit the end of the rope here. Well, you know, if you want, this is merely a taste, Bob. Like I said, what's that PDF? 40 something pages, Bob?
I think 44.
Yeah, man. It's wow. A great thing. It's an easy read. It's written by Bob, right? There's no 50 cent words in there. Wait a minute.
No, and the chapters are short. You know, I purposely wrote it so that no chapter was ponderous. I think the longest chapter's maybe 10 or 12 pages.
And Bob, I was just actually doing some math here. If there's no 50 cent words in there, I think you owe me some money.
When do I get my royalty check?
Yeah, we're still waiting on that one.
We'll be waiting a long time.
Yeah. All right. So before we go, Bob, what was your first computer?
Mac Plus.
Oh, really? So you started you started with a Mac. You didn't start with the Apple IIs like John and I, huh?
No. And check this out. I bought a Mac Plus. I test drove the 512, but I knew that there was another Mac coming out, so I didn't buy it.
Right.
And when the Mac Plus came out, I was the first one in Los Angeles, I think, to take delivery.
Okay.
And immediately thereafter, I bought a SCSI hard disk for it because that was the first SCSI Mac.
Yep.
And the Mac cost me $24.95.
Yeah, what that drive cost you, man?
The 20 megabyte data frame 20 cost me $24.95.
Now, folks, just so you know, folks, we won't be linking to data frame in the show notes because, frankly, they're just not around.
Yeah, I think they've been Super Mac. They've been gone for a long time.
That's right.
And then I also bought a 4 gigabyte upgrade from Mac memory, which $24.95. So my Mac Plus cost me like $7,500.
Wow.
And then I bought a LaserWriter for $7,000.
Yeah.
I actually leased a LaserWriter.
Okay.
And then when I got into the writing business at Macazine, the first thing I did was convince QMS to lend me a laser printer.
Oh, smart thinking, man. Yeah, and such was the beginning of your career getting free junk.
Oh, man, I have to say that's one of the best parts of this job.
Isn't it, though?
Being able to call somebody up and go, that looks like fun. Would you send me one? And have them say, oh, absolutely, Mr.
Levitas, sir. Like when the stuff just arrives.
You know, that happens a lot.
All the time. You know, every time we've gone away, and we went away last weekend, every time we've gone away recently, a new set of speakers for the iPod arrives. And the first time it was the Spectone Retro. And that was cool. This last one, I haven't read the manual, so I don't want to say the brand name yet because, frankly, it sucked. It squealed and really sounded terrible. Even my wife said, do we have to take that home from the hotel? So be careful about what you send to us, folks.
Yeah, but I got to agree. You know what works the best is to say you're Bob and send me this. Because it works for me, too.
All right.
Or I say it's me. But yeah, I got this adapter, Dave. I'm not too happy with it. Something's wrong with it. Or maybe the drives. I don't know. We'll talk about it. So,
hey, Bob. Thanks for taking the time to join us this evening. I know you you squeezed this in your ever so busy schedule. So we appreciate it.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's been a treat.
You bet, man. Folks, next week we're back to normal. Don't forget to go to podcast or Portable Media Expo. Cashfly Hosting is where you downloaded this. Call us 206-666-GEEK. Email MacGeekGab@MacObserver.com. Thanks, Bob. Thanks, John.
Thanks, Dave.
Thanks, Dave.
You bet.
Thanks, John.
Thanks, Bob.
And good night.
Don't get